He doubted Sandriel ever had someone snap photos of her like that. All he'd been able to think about while he beheld Sandriel was the weight of his knife at his side. All he could smell was the reek of her arena, blood and shit and piss and sand. Then Bryce had made her move, played that irreverent, vapid party girl she wanted them to believe she was, that he'd believed she was, snapping those photos, giving him an out. Hunt placed his hand against the disc beside the button panel and punched in a different floor, overriding wherever the elevator had been taking them. We can leave from the landing. His voice was like gravel. He always forgot just how similar Sandriel and Shahar looked. Not identical twins, but their coloring and build had been nearly the same. I'll have to carry you, though. She twirled the silken length of her ponytail around a wrist, unaware that she bared the golden column of her throat to him with the movement. Not interested. She'd sounded certain. Not gleeful, not gloating, but firm. Hunt didn't dare consider how this rejection might affect his bargain with Micah, to wonder if Micah would somehow blame Hunt for it. Bryce asked, No back door?
There is, but we'd have to go down again.
He could feel her questions bubbling up, and before she could ask any of them, he said,
Sandriel's second, Pollux, is even worse than she is. When he arrives, avoid him at all costs.
He couldn't bring himself to dredge up the list of horrors Pollux had inflicted on innocence. Bryce clicked her tongue. Like my path will ever cross theirs if I can help it.
After that show in the lobby, it might.
But Hunt didn't tell her that Sandriel wasn't above petty revenge for slights and minor offenses. Didn't tell her that Sandriel would likely never forget Bryce's face, might already be asking Micah who she was. The doors opened onto a quiet upper level. The halls were dim, hushed, and he led her into a labyrinth of gym equipment. A broad path cut through the gear directly to the wall of windows and the launch balcony beyond. There was no railing, just an open jut of stone. She balked.
I've never dropped anyone,
he promised. She gingerly followed him outside. The dry wind whipped at them. Far below, the city street was packed with onlookers and news vans. Above them, angels were flying, some fleeing outright, some circling the five spires of the Comitium to get a glimpse of Sandriel from afar. Hunt bent, sliding a hand under Bryce's knees, bracing another on her back, and picked her up. Her scent filled his senses, washing away the last of the memory of that reeking dungeon.
Thank you,
he said, meeting her stare.
For bailing me out back there.
She shrugged as best she could in his grip, but winced as he stepped closer to the edge.
That was fast thinking, he went on, ridiculous on so many levels, but I owe you.
She slid her arms around his neck, her grip near strangling. You helped me out last night. We're even. Hunt didn't give her a chance to change her mind as he beat his wings in a powerful push and leapt off the edge. She clung to him, tight enough to hurt, and he held her firmly, the duffel strapped across his chest, awkwardly banging against his thigh.
Are you even watching?
He asked over the wind as he sent them sailing hard and fast, flying up, up, up the side of the adjacent skyscraper in the central business district. Absolutely not, she said in his ear. He chuckled as they leveled out, cruising above the reaching pinnacles of the CBD, the Istros a winding sparkle to their right, the mist-shrouded aisle of the Bone Quarter looming behind it. To the left, he could just make out the walls of the city, and then the wide-open land beyond the Angel's Gate. No houses or buildings or roads out there. Nothing but the aerial port. But at the gate to their right, the Merchant's Gate in the meat market, the broad pale line of the western road shot into the rolling cypress-dotted hills. A pleasant, beautiful city, in the midst of a pleasant, beautiful countryside. In Pangaea, The cities were little more than pens for the Vanir to trap and feed on the humans and their children. No wonder the humans had risen up. No wonder they were shredding that territory with their chemical bombs and machines. A shiver of rage ran down his spine at the thought of those children, and he made himself look toward the city again. The central business district was separated from the old square by the clear dividing line of Ward Avenue. The sunlight glowed off the white stones of Luna's temple, and, as if in a mirror reflection directly across from it, seemed to be absorbed by the black-domed Oracle's temple, his destination tomorrow morning. But Hunt looked beyond the old square, to where the green of five roses sparkled in the muggy haze. Towering cypresses and palms rose up, along with glittering bursts of magic. In Moonwood, more oak trees, less magic frills. Hunt didn't bother looking anywhere else. Asphodel Meadows wasn't much to behold. Yet the Meadows was a luxury development compared to the human districts in Pangera.
"Why'd you want to live in the old square?"
he asked after several minutes of flying in silence, with only the song of the wind to listen to. She still wasn't looking, and he began a gentle descent toward her little section of the old square, just a block off the river and a few blocks from the Heart Gate. Even from that distance, he could see it, the clear quartz glinting like an icy spear toward the gray sky. "It's the heart of the city," she said. "Why not be there?"
"Phyro is cleaner.
And full of fey peacocks who sneer at half-breeds." She spat out the term.
"Moonwood?
Sabine's territory?" A harsh laugh, and she pulled back to look at him. Her smattering of freckles crinkled as she scrunched her face. "Honestly, the old square is about the only safe place for someone like me. Plus, it's close to work, and I've got my pick of restaurants, music halls, and museums. I never need to leave."
"But you do. You go all over the city on your morning runs. Why a different route so often?"
"Keeps it fresh and fun." Her building became clearer, the roof empty. A fire pit, some lounge chairs, and a grill occupied most of it. Hunt banked, circling back, and smoothly landed, carefully setting her down. She clung to him long enough to get her legs steady, then stepped back. He adjusted the duffel, heading for the roof door. He held it open for her, first light warming the stairwell beyond.
"Did you mean what you said to Micah?"
She plunked down the stairs, the ponytail bobbing. "Of course I did. Why the hell would I want to go out with him?"
"He's the governor of Valbara."
"So? Just because I saved his life, that doesn't mean I'm destined to be his girlfriend. It'd be like banging a statue anyway."
Hunt smirked. "In all fairness, the females who've been with him say otherwise."
She unlocked her door, mouth twisting. "Like I said, not interested."
"You sure it's not because you're just avoiding—"
"See, that right there is the problem. You and the whole rest of the world seem to think that I exist just to find someone like him. That of course I can't be genuinely not interested, because why wouldn't I want a big, strong male to protect me? Surely if I'm pretty and single, the second any powerful Vanir shows interest, I'm bound to drop my panties. In fact, I didn't even have a life until he showed up. Never had good sex, never felt alive."
Darkest hell, this woman. "You've got a real chip on your shoulder there, you know."
Bryce snickered. "You make it really fucking easy, you know."
Hunt crossed his arms. She crossed hers.
That stupid fucking ponytail seemed to cross its proverbial arms, too.
"So?"
Hunt said through his teeth as he dumped his duffel on the ground, clothes and weapons thumping hard.
"You gonna come with me to the Oracle tomorrow, or what?"
"Oh no, Athalar." Her purred words ran over his skin, and her smile was pure wickedness. Hunt braced himself for whatever was about to come out of her mouth, even as he found himself looking forward to it. "You get to deal with her alone." Chapter 32. After dropping off his gear at the apartment, Hunt trailed Bryce back to work, where she said she intended to look through Danica's location data from Declan and cross-reference it with her own list and the murder scenes so far. But the thought of sitting underground for another few hours grated enough that he found himself sitting on the roof instead. He needed the fresh open air, even if angels were still flying past, leaving the city. He made a point not to look toward the Comitium, looming at his back. Just before sundown, Searing Sinto, Bryce emerged from the gallery with a grim expression that matched Hunt's own.
"Nothing?"
he asked, landing on the sidewalk beside her.
"Nothing," she confirmed.
"We'll look tomorrow with fresh eyes."
Maybe there was something they were missing. Today had been long and awful and weird, and he was more than ready to collapse on her couch. He asked as casually as he could.
"There's a big sunball game on tonight. You mind if I watch it?"
She glanced at him sidelong, her brows rising.
"What?"
he asked, unable to keep the corner of his mouth from twitching upward.
"It's just, you're such a guy."
She waved a hand at him, with the sports and stuff.
"Females like sports as much as males."
She rolled her eyes. "This sunball watching person doesn't fit with my mental image of the shadow of death."
"Sorry to disappoint."
Hunt's turned to lift a brow.
"What do you think I do with my spare time?"
"I don't know. I assumed you cursed at the stars and brooded and plotted revenge on all your enemies."
She didn't know the half of it, but Hunt let out a low chuckle. "Again, sorry to disappoint."
Her eyes crinkled with amusement, the last of the day's sun lighting them into liquid gold. He forced himself to monitor the streets around them. They were a block from Bryce's apartment when Hunt's phone rang. She tensed, peering at his screen the same moment he did. The phone rang a second time. They both stared at the name that popped up, pedestrians streaming past.
"You gonna answer it?"
Bryce asked quietly. It rang a third time. Hunt knew. Before he hit the button, he knew. Which was why he stepped away from Quinlan, putting the phone to his ear just as he said blandly,
"Hi, boss." "I have work for you tonight,"
Micah said. Hunt's gut twisted.
"Sure." "I hope I'm not interrupting your fun with Miss Quinlan."
"We're good,"
Hunt said tightly. Micah's pause was loaded.
"What occurred in the lobby this morning is never to happen again. Understood?"
"Yes."
He bit out the word, but he said it and meant it, because the alternative to Micah was now staying at the governor's residence in the Comitium. Because Sandriel would have drawn out his punishment for refusing to bow, for embarrassing her, for days, weeks, months. But Micah would give him this warning and make him do this job tonight to remind him where the fuck he stood in the pecking order, and then that would be that.
"Good," Micah said. "The file's waiting at your room in the barracks."
He paused, as if sensing the question now burning through Hunt.
"The offer still stands, Athalar. Don't make me reconsider."
The call ended. Hunt clenched his jaw hard enough to hurt. Quinlan's forehead wrinkled with concern.
"Everything okay?"
Hunt slid the phone into his pocket.
"It's fine."
He resumed walking.
"Just Legion business."
Not a lie. Not entirely. The glass doors to her building opened. Hunt nodded toward the lobby.
"You head up. I've got something to do. I'll call if we get the date and time for breaks."
Her amber eyes narrowed. Yeah, she saw right through it. Or rather, heard everything he wasn't saying. Knew what Micah had ordered him to do. But she said,
"All right."
She turned toward the lobby, but added over her shoulder,
"Good luck."
He didn't bother answering before he shot into the skies, phone already to his ear as he called Justinian to ask him to play sentry for a few hours. Justinian whined about missing the sunball game, but Hunt pulled rank, earning a grumbled promise that the angel would be at the adjacent rooftop in 10 minutes. Justinian arrived in 8. Leaving his brother in arms to it, Hunt sucked in a breath of dusty, dry air, the Istros a teal ribbon to his left, and went to do what he did best.
Please.
It was always the same word, the only word people tended to say when the Umbra Mortis stood before them. Through the blood splattered on his helmet, Hunt regarded the male cougar shifter cowering before him. His clawed hands shook as he left them upraised.
Please,
the man sobbed. Every utterance dragged Hunt further away, until the arm he outstretched was distant, until the gun he aimed at the male's head was just a bit of metal. A death for a death.
Please.
The male had done horrible things, unspeakable things. He deserved this, deserved worse.
Please, please, please.
Hunt was nothing but a shadow, a wisp of life, an instrument of death. He was nothing and no one at all.
Please.
Hunt's finger curled on the trigger. Hunt returned early. Well, early for him. Thankfully, no one was in the barracks bathroom while he showered off the blood, then sat under the scalding spray for so long that he lost track of time. He would have stayed longer, had he not known that Justinian was waiting. So he patched himself up, pieced himself together, half-crawled out of the boiling hot shower and into the person he was, when he wasn't forced to put a bullet between someone's eyes. He made a few stops before getting back to Bryce's apartment, but he made it back, relieving Justinian from his duties, and walked through Bryce's door at 11. She was in her bedroom, the door shut, but Syrinx let out a little yowl of welcome from within. Her scolding hush was proof that she'd heard Hunt return. Hunt prayed she wouldn't come into the hall. Words were still beyond him. Her doorknob turned. But Hunt was already at his room, and didn't dare look across the expanse of the great room as she said tightly,
"You're back."
"Yeah,"
he choked out. Even across the room, he could feel her questions. But she said softly,
"I recorded the game for you, if you still want to watch it."
Something tightened unbearably in his chest, but Hunt didn't look back. He slipped into his room with a mumbled night and shut the door behind him. Chapter 33. The Oracle's black chamber reeked of sulfur and roasted meat, the former from the natural gases rising from the hole in the center of the space, the latter from the pile of bull bones currently smoldering atop the altar against the far wall, an offering to Ogenis, keeper of mysteries. After last night, what he'd done, a sacred temple was the last place he wanted to be, the last place he deserved to be. The 20-foot doors shut behind Hunt as he strode across the silent chamber, aiming for the hole in the center and wall of smoke behind it. His eyes burned with the various acrid scents, and he summoned a wind to keep them out of his face. Behind the smoke, a figure moved.
"I wondered when the shadow of death would darken my chamber,"
a lovely voice said. Young, full of light and amusement, and yet tinged with ancient cruelty. Hunt halted at the edge of the hole, avoiding the urge to peer into the endless blackness.
"I won't take much of your time,"
he said, his voice swallowed by the room, the pit, the smoke.
"I shall give you what time Ogenis offers."
The smoke parted, and he sucked in a breath at the being that emerged. Sphinxes were rare. Only a few dozen walked the earth, and all of them had been called to the service of the gods. No one knew how old they were, and this one before him. She was so beautiful he forgot what to do with his body. The golden lioness's form moved with fluid grace, pacing the other side of the hole, weaving in and out of the mist. Golden wings lay folded against the slender body, shimmering as if they were crafted from molten metal. And above that winged lion's body, the golden-haired woman's face was as flawless as Shahar's had been. No one knew her name. She was simply her title, Oracle. He wondered if she was so old that she'd forgotten her true name. The Sphinx blinked large brown eyes at him, lashes brushing against her light brown cheeks.
Ask me your question, and I shall tell you what the smoke whispers to me.
The words rumbled over his bones, luring him in. Not in the way he sometimes let himself be lured in by beautiful females, but in the manner that a spider might lure a fly to its web. Maybe Quinlan and her cousin had a point about not wanting to come here. Hell, Quinlan had refused to even set foot in the park surrounding the black-stoned temple, opting to wait on a bench at its edge with Rune.
What I say here is confidential, right?
He asked.
Once the gods speak, I become the conduit through which their words pass.
She arranged herself on the floor before the hole, folding her front paws, claws glinting in the dim light of the braziers smoldering to either side of them.
But yes, this shall be confidential.
It sounded like a whole bunch of bullshit, but he blew out a breath, meeting those large brown eyes, and said,
Why does someone want Luna's horn?
He didn't ask who had taken it. He knew from the reports that she had already been asked that question 2 years ago, and had refused to answer. She blinked, wings rustling as if in surprise, but settled herself, breathed in the fumes rising from the hole. Minutes passed, and Hunt's head began to throb with the various scents, especially the reeking sulfur. Smoke swirled, masking the Sphinx from sight even though she sat only 10 feet away. Hunt forced himself to keep still. A rasping voice slithered out of the smoke.
To open the doorway between worlds.
A chill seized Hunt.
They wish to use the horn to reopen the Northern Rift. The horn's purpose wasn't merely to close doors. It opens them, too. It depends on what the bearer wishes.
But the horn is broken.
It can be healed.
Hunt's heart stalled.
How?
A long, long pause. Then,
It is veiled. I cannot see. None can see.
The Fey legends say it can't be repaired.
Those are legends. This is truth. The horn can be repaired.
Who wants to do this?
He had to ask, even if it was foolish.
This, too, is veiled.
Helpful.
Be grateful, Lord of Lightning, that you learned anything at all.
That voice, that title. His mouth went dry.
Do you wish to know what I see in your future, Orion Athalar?
He recoiled at the sound of his birth name like he'd been punched in the gut.
No one has spoken that name in 200 years,
he whispered.
The name your mother gave you.
Yes,
he ground out, his gut twisting at the memory of his mother's face, the love that had always shone in her eyes for him. Utterly undeserved, that love, especially when he had not been there to protect her. The oracle whispered,
Shall I tell you what I see, Orion?
I'm not sure I want to know.
The smoke peeled back enough for him to see her sensuous lips part in a cruel smile that did not wholly belong in this world.
People come from across Midgard to plead for my visions, yet you do not wish to know.
The hair on the back of his neck stood.
I thank you, but no.
thanks seemed wise, like something that might appease a god. Her teeth shone, her canines long enough to shred flesh.
Did Bryce Quinlan tell you what occurred when she stood in this chamber 12 years ago?
His blood turned to ice.
That's Quinlan's business.
That smile didn't falter.
You do not wish to know what I saw for her either?
No.
He spoke from his heart. It's her business, he repeated. His lightning rose within him, rallying against a foe he could not slay. The oracle blinked, a slow bob of those thick lashes.
You remind me of that which was lost long ago,
she said quietly.
I had not realized it might ever appear again.
Before Hunt dared ask what that meant, her lion's tail, a larger version of Syrinx's, swayed over the floor. The doors behind him opened on a phantom wind, his dismissal clear. But the oracle said before stalking into the vapors,
Do yourself a favor, Orion Athalar. Keep well away from Bryce Quinlan.
Chapter 34 Bryce and Rune had waited at the edge of Oracle's Park for Hunt, each minute dripping by. And when he'd emerged again, eyes searching every inch of her face, Bryce knew it was bad, whatever he'd learned. Hunt waited until they'd walked down a quiet residential block bordering the park before he told them what the Oracle had said about the horn. His words were still hanging in the bright morning air around them as Bryce blew out a breath. Hunt did the same beside her, and then said,
If someone has learned how to repair the horn after so long, then they can do the opposite of what Prince Peleus did. They can open the Northern Rift. It seems like one hell of a motive to kill anyone who might rat them out.
Rune ran a hand over the buzzed side of his hair.
Like the acolyte at the temple, either as a warning to us to stay the fuck away from the horn, or to keep her from saying anything if she found out somehow.
Hunt nodded.
Isaiah questioned the others at the temple. They said the girl was the only acolyte on duty the night the horn was stolen, and was interviewed by them, but claimed she didn't know anything about it.
Guilt twisted and writhed within Bryce. Rune said,
Maybe she was scared to say anything, and when we showed up...
Hunt finished.
Whoever is looking for the horn doesn't want us anywhere near it. They could have learned she'd been on duty that night and gone to extract information from her. They'd have wanted to make sure she didn't reveal what she knew to anyone else, to make sure she stayed silent, permanently.
Bryce added the girl's death to the list of others she'd repay before this was finished. Then she asked, If that mark on the crate really was the horn, maybe the Ophion, or even just the Kara's sect, is seeking the horn to aid in their rebellion. To open a portal to hell, and bring the demon princes back here in some sort of alliance, to overthrow the Asteri. She shuddered. Millions would die. At their chilled silence, she went on. Maybe Danica caught on to their plans about the horn, and was killed for it. And the acolyte, too.
Hunt rubbed the back of his neck, his face ashen. They'd need help from a Vanir to summon a demon like that. But it's a possibility. There are some Vanir pledged to their cause. Or maybe one of the witches summoned it. The new witch queen could be testing her power or something.
Unlikely that a witch was involved,
Rune said a shade tightly, piercings along his ear glinting in the sun.
The witches obey the Asteri. They've had millennia of unbroken loyalty.
Bryce said, But the horn can only be used by a starborn fey. By you, Rune.
Hunt's wings rustled. So maybe they're looking for some way around the starborn shit.
Honestly, Rune said, I'm not sure I could use the horn. Prince Peleus possessed what was basically an ocean of starlight at his disposal.
Her brother's brow furrowed, and a pinprick of light appeared at his fingertip.
This is about as good as it gets for me.
Well, you're not going to use the horn, even if we find it, so it won't matter, Bryce said. Rune crossed his arms.
If someone can repair the horn?
I don't even know how that would be possible. I read some mentions of the horn having a sort of sentience to it, almost like it was alive.
Maybe a healing power of some sort would be applicable? A medwitch might have some insight.
Bryce countered. They heal people, not objects. And the book you found in the gallery's library said the horn could only be repaired by light that is not light, magic that is not magic.
Legends, said Hunt, not truth.
It's worth looking into, Rune said,
and halted, glancing between Bryce and Hunt, who was watching her warily from the corner of his eye. Whatever the fuck that meant.
Rune said, I'll look up a few medwitches and pay some discreet visits.
Fine, she said. When he stiffened, she amended, That sounds good. Even if nothing else about this case did. Bryce tuned out the sound of Lahaba watching one of her dramas and tried to concentrate on the map of Danica's locations. Tried, but failed, since she could feel Hunt's eyes lingering on her from across the library table. For the 100th time in that hour alone. She met his stare, and he looked away quickly.
What?
He shook his head and went back to his research. You've been staring at me all afternoon with that weird fucking look on your face. He drummed his fingers on the table, then blurted.
You want to tell me why the Oracle warned me to stay the hell away from you?
Bryce let out a short laugh.
Is that why you seemed all freaked when you left the temple?
She said she'd reveal her vision for you, like she has a damned bone to pick with you.
A shiver crawled down Bryce's spine at that.
I don't blame her if she's still pissed.
Hunt paled, but Bryce said, In Fey culture, there's a custom. When girls get their cycle for the first time, or when they turn 13, they go to an oracle. The visit provides a glimpse toward what sort of power they might ascend to when mature, so their parents can plan unions years before the actual drop. Boys go too, at age 13. These days, if the parents are progressive, it's just an old tradition to figure out a career for their children. Soldiers or healers or whatever fey do if they can't afford to lounge around eating grapes all day.
The fey and Malakim might hate each other, but they have a lot of bullshit in common.
Bryce hummed her agreement. My cycle started when I was a few weeks shy of 13. And my mom had this, I don't know, crisis? This sudden fear that she'd shut me off from a part of my heritage. She got in touch with my biological father. 2 weeks later, the documents showed up, declaring me a full Civitas. It came with a catch, though. I had to claim sky and breath as my house. I refused, but my mom actually insisted I do it. She saw it as some kind of protection, I don't know. Apparently, she was convinced enough of his intention to protect me that she asked if he wanted to meet me for the first time. And I eventually cooled down enough from the whole house allegiance thing to realize I wanted to meet him too.
Hunt read her beat of silence. It didn't go well.
No. That visit was the first time I met Rune, too. I came here, stayed in Fyro for the summer. I met the Autumn King.
The lie was easy.
Met my father, too, she added. In the initial few days, the visit wasn't as bad as my mother had feared. I liked what I saw. Even if some of the other fey children whispered that I was a half-breed, I knew what I was. I've never not been proud of it, being human, I mean. And I knew my father had invited me, so he at least wanted me there. I didn't mind what the others thought. Until the Oracle.
He winced. I have a bad feeling about this.
It was catastrophic. She swallowed against the memory. When the Oracle looked into her smoke, she screamed, clawed at her eyes. There was no point hiding it. The event had been known in some circles.
I heard later that she went blind for a week.
Holy shit. Bryce laughed to herself. Apparently my future is that bad. Hunt didn't smile.
What happened?
I returned to the petitioner's antechamber. All you could hear was the oracle screaming and cursing me. The acolytes rushed in.
I meant with your father.
He called me a worthless disgrace, stormed out of the temple's VIP exit so no one could know who he was to me. And by the time I caught up, he'd taken the car and left. When I got back to his house, I found my bags on the curb.
Asshole. Dannon had nothing to say about him kicking his cousin to the curb.
The king forbade Rune to interfere.
She examined her nails.
Believe me, Rune tried to fight, but the king bound him. So I got a cab to the train station. Rune managed to shove money for the fares into my hand.
Your mom must have gone ballistic.
She did. Bryce paused a moment and then said, Seems like the Oracle's still pissed.
He threw her a half smile. I'd consider it a badge of honor. Bryce, despite herself, smiled back.
You're probably the only one who thinks that.
His eyes lingered on her face again, and she knew it had nothing to do with what the Oracle had said. Bryce cleared her throat.
Find anything?
Catching her request to drop the subject, Hunt pivoted the laptop toward her.
I've been looking at this ancient shit for days, and this is all I've found.
The terracotta vase dated back nearly 15,000 years, after Prince Peleus by about a century, but the Crystallos hadn't yet faded from common memory. She read the brief catalog copy and said,
It's at a gallery in Mercia,
which put it a sea and 2,000 miles beyond that from Lunathian. She pulled the computer to her and clicked on the thumbnail.
But these photos should be enough.
I might have been born before computers, Quinlan, but I do know how to use them.
I'm just trying to spare you from further ruining your badass image as the Umber Mortis. We can't have word getting out that you're a computer nerd.
Thanks for your concern.
His eyes met hers, the corner of his mouth kicking up. Her toes might have curled in her heels, slightly. Bryce straightened.
All right, tell me what I'm looking at.
A good sign.
Hunt pointed at the image, rendered in black paint against the burnt orange of the terracotta, of the Crystallos demon roaring, as a sword was driven through its head by a helmeted male warrior. She leaned toward the screen.
How so?
That the Crystallos can be killed the old-fashioned way. As far as I can tell, there's no magic or special artifact being used to kill it here. Just plain brute force.
Her gut tightened.
This vase could be an artistic interpretation. That thing killed Danica and the pack of devils, and knocked Micah on his ass, too.
And you mean to tell me some ancient warrior killed it with just a sword through the head? Though Lahaba's show kept playing, Bryce knew the sprite was listening to every word. Hunt said,
Maybe the Crystallos had the element of surprise on its side that night.
She tried and failed to block out the red pulped piles, the spray of blood on the walls, the way her entire body had seemed to plummet downward even while standing still, as she stared at what was left of her friends.
Or maybe this is just a bullshit rendering by an artist who heard an embellished song around a fire and did their own take on it.
She began tapping her foot under the table, as if it had somehow calmed her staccato heartbeat. He held her stare, his black eyes stark and honest.
All right.
She waited for him to push, to pry, but Hunt slid the computer back to his side of the table. He squinted.
That's odd. It says the vase is originally from Parthos.
He angled his head.
I thought Parthos was a myth, a human fairy tale.
Because humans were no better than rock-banging animals until the Asteri arrived.
Tell me you don't believe that conspiracy crap about an ancient library in the heart of a pre-existing human civilization.
When she didn't answer, Hunt challenged,
If something like that did exist, where's the evidence?
Bryce zipped her amulet along its chain and nodded toward the image on the screen.
This vase was made by a nymph, he said, not some mythical enlightened human.
Maybe Parthos hadn't been wiped off the map entirely at that point.
Hunt looked at her from under lowered brows. Really, Quinlan?
When she again didn't answer, he jerked his chin at her digital tablet.
Where are you with the data about Danica's locations?
Hunt's phone buzzed before she could reply, but Bryce said, reeling herself back together as that image of the slain Kristallos bled with what had been done to Danica, what had been left of her.
I'm still ruling out the things that were likely unconnected, but...
Really, the only outlier here is the fact that Danica was on sentry duty at Luna's temple. She was sometimes stationed in the general area, but never specifically at the temple itself. And somehow, days before she died, she got put on watch there. And data shows her being right there when the horn was stolen. The acolyte was also there that night. It's all got to tie together somehow.
Hunt set down his phone. Maybe Philip Briggs will enlighten us tonight.
Her head snapped up. Tonight? Mahaba completely stopped watching her show at that.
Just got the message from Victoria. They transferred him from Adrestia. We're meeting him in an hour in a holding cell under the Comitium.
He surveyed the data spread before them.
He's going to be difficult.
I know.
He leaned back in the chair. He's not going to have nice things to say about Danica. You sure you can handle hearing his kind of venom?
I'm fine.
Really? Because that vase just set you off, and I doubt coming face to face with this guy is going to be any easier.
The walls began swelling around her. Get out. Her words cut between them. Just because we're working together doesn't mean you're entitled to push into my personal matters. Hunt merely looked her over, saw all of that. But he said roughly,
I want to head to the Comitium in 20. I'll wait for you outside.
Bryce trailed Hunt out, making sure he didn't touch any of the books and that they didn't grab for him, then shut the door before he'd fully walked onto the street beyond. She sank against the iron until she sat on the carpet and braced her forearms on her knees. They were gone. All of them. Thanks to that demon depicted on an ancient vase. They were gone. And there would be no more wolves in her life. No more hanging out in the apartment. No more drunken, stupid dancing on street corners or blasting music at 3 a.m. until their neighbors threatened to call the 33rd. No friends who would say, I love you and mean it. Syrinx and Lily came creeping in, the chimera curling up beneath her bent legs, the sprite lying belly down on Bryce's forearms.
Don't blame Athy. I think he wants to be our friend.
I don't give a shit what Hunt Athalar wants.
June is busy with ballet, and Fury is as good as gone. Maybe it's time for more friends, Bibi. You seem sad again, like you were 2 winters ago. Fine 1 minute, then not fine the next. You don't dance. You don't hang out with anyone. You don't-
Leave it, Lahaba.
Hunt is nice. And Prince Rune is nice. But Danica was never nice to me, always biting and snarling, or she ignored me.
Watch it. The sprite crawled off her arm and floated in front of her, arms wrapping across her round belly.
You can be as cold as a reaper, Bryce.
Then she was gone, whizzing off to stop a thick leather-bound tome from crawling its way up the stairs. Bryce blew out a long breath, trying to piece the hole in her chest together. 20 minutes, Hunt had said. She had 20 minutes before going to question Briggs. 20 minutes to get her shit together. Or at least pretend she had. Chapter 35. The fluorescent wands of first light hummed through the white-paneled, pristine corridor far beneath the Comitium. Hunt was a storm of black and gray against the shining white tiles, his steps unfaltering as he aimed for one of the sealed metal doors at the end of the long hall. A step behind him, Bryce simply watched Hunt move. The way he cut through the world, the way the guards in the entry room hadn't so much as checked his ID before waving them through. She hadn't realized that this place existed beneath the five shining towers of the Comitium, that they had cells, interrogation rooms. The one she'd been in the night Danica had died had been five blocks from here, a facility governed by protocols. But this place? She tried not to think about what this place was for, what laws stopped applying once one crossed over the threshold. The lack of any scent except bleach suggested it was scrubbed down often. The drains she noted every few feet suggested. She didn't want to know what the drains suggested. They reached a room without windows, and Hunt laid a palm against a circular metal lock to its left. A hum and hiss, and he shouldered open the door, peering inside before nodding to her. The first lights above droned like hornets. What would her own first light go toward? Small mote that it would be. With Hunt, the explosion of energy-filled light that had probably erupted from him when he'd made the drop had likely gone toward fueling an entire city. She sometimes wondered about it. Whose first light was powering her phone, or the stereo, or her coffee machine? And now was not the time to think about random shit, she chided herself, as she followed Hunt into the cell and beheld the pale-skinned man sitting there. Two seats had been set before the metal table in the center of the room, where Briggs's shackles were currently chained. His white jumpsuit was pristine, but... Bryce beheld the state of his gaunt, hollow face and willed herself not to flinch. His dark hair was buzzed close to his scalp, and though not a bruise or scratch marred his skin, his deep blue eyes, empty and hopeless. Briggs said nothing as she and Hunt claimed the seats across the table. Cameras blinked red lights in every corner, and she had no doubt someone was listening in a control room a few doors down. "We won't take much of your time," Hunt said, as if noting those haunted eyes as well.
"Time is all I have now, Angel. And being here is better than being there."
There, where they kept him in Adrestria prison, where they did the things to him that resulted in those broken, awful eyes. Bryce could feel Hunt silently urging her to ask the first of their questions, and she took a breath, bracing herself to fill this humming, too small room with her voice. But Briggs asked,
"What month is it? What's today's date?"
Horror coiled in her gut. This man had wanted to kill people, she reminded herself. Even if it seemed he hadn't killed Danica, he had planned to kill plenty of others, to ignite a larger-scale war between the human and Vanir, to overthrow the Asteri. It was why he remained behind bars.
"It's the 12th of April,"
Hunt said, his voice low.
"In the year 15,035. It's only been 2 years."
Bryce swallowed against the dryness in her mouth.
"We came to ask you about some things related to 2 years ago, as well as some recent events."
Briggs looked at her then, really looked.
"Why?"
Hunt leaned back, a silent indication that this was now her show to run.
"The White Raven nightclub was bombed a few days ago. Considering that it was one of your prime targets a few years ago, evidence points towards Kara's being active again."
"And you think I'm behind it?"
A bitter smile curved the angular, harsh face. Hunt tensed.
"I don't know what year it is, girl. And you think I'm somehow able to make outside contact?"
"What about your followers?" Hunt said carefully.
"Would they have done it in your name?" "Why bother?"
Briggs reclined in his chair.
"I failed them. I failed our people."
He nodded toward Bryce.
"And failed people like you, the undesirables."
"You never represented me," Bryce said quietly. I abhor what you tried to do.
Briggs laughed, a broken rasp. When the Vanir tell you you're not good enough for any job because of your human blood, when males like this asshole next to you just see you as a piece of ass to be fucked and then discarded, when you see your mother, it is a human mother for you, isn't it?
It always is. Being treated like trash. You'll find those self-righteous feelings fading real fast.
She refused to reply, to think about the times she'd seen her mother ignored or sneered at. Hunt said,
"So you're saying you're not behind this bombing?"
"Again," Briggs said, tugging on his shackles, "the only people I see on a daily basis are the ones who take me apart like a cadaver and then stitch me up again before nightfall. They're medwitches smoothing everything away."
Her stomach churned. Even Hunt's throat bobbed as he swallowed.
"Your followers wouldn't have considered bombing the nightclub in revenge,"
Briggs demanded.
"Against who?"
"Us. For investigating Danica Fendier's murder and looking for Luna's horn."
Briggs's blue eyes shuddered.
"So the assholes in the 33rd finally realized I didn't kill her."
"You haven't been officially cleared of anything," Hunt said roughly.
Briggs shook his head, staring at the wall to his left.
"I don't know anything about Luna's horn. And I'm sure as shit no Kara's soldier did either. But I liked Danica Fendier. Even when she busted me, I liked her."
Hunt stared at the gaunt, haunted man, a shell of the powerfully built adult he'd been 2 years ago. What they were doing to him in that prison? Fucking hell. Hunt could take a few guesses about the manner of torture. The memories of it being inflicted upon him still dragged him from sleep. Bryce was blinking at Briggs.
"What do you mean, you liked her?"
Briggs smiled, savoring Quinlan's surprise.
"She circled me and my agents for weeks. She even met with me twice, told me to stop my plans or else she'd have to bring me in. Well, that was the first time. The second time, she warned me that she had enough evidence against me, that she had to bring me in. But I could get off easy if I admitted to my plotting and ended it then and there. I didn't listen then either. That third time, she brought her pack, and that was that."
Hunt reined in his emotions, setting his features into neutrality.
"Danica went easy on you?"
Bryce's face had drained of color. It took a surprising amount of effort not to touch her hand.
"She tried to."
Briggs ran gnarled fingers down his pristine jumpsuit.
"For a Vanir, she was fair. I don't think she necessarily disagreed with us. With my methods, yes, but I thought she might have been a sympathizer."
He surveyed Bryce again with a starkness that had Hunt's hackles rising. Hunt suppressed a growl at the term.
"Your followers knew this?"
"Yes. I think she even let some of them get away that night."
Hunt blew out a breath.
"That is a big fucking claim to make against an ox leader."
"She's dead, isn't she? Who cares?"
Bryce flinched. Enough so that Hunt didn't hold back his growl this time.
"Danica wasn't a rebel sympathizer," Bryce hissed.
Briggs looked down his nose at her.
"Not yet, maybe,"
he agreed.
"But Danica could have been starting down that path. Maybe she saw how her pretty half-breed friend was treated by others and didn't like it too much either."
He smiled knowingly when Bryce blinked at his correct guess regarding her relationship to Danica, the emotions he'd probably read in her face. Briggs went on.
"My followers knew Danica was a potential asset. We'd discussed it right up until the raid.
And that night, Danica and her pack were fair with us.
We fought, and even managed to get in a few good blows on that second of hers.
He whistled,
Connor Holstrom.
Bryce went utterly rigid.
Guy was a bruiser.
From the cruel curve of his lips, he'd clearly noticed how stiff she'd gone at the mention of Connor's name.
Was Holstrom your boyfriend? Pity.
That's none of your business. The words were flat as Briggs's eyes. They tightened something in Hunt's chest, her words, the vacancy in her voice. Hunt asked him,
You never mentioned any of this when you were initially arrested?
Briggs spat.
Why the fuck would I ever rat out a potentially sympathetic, incredibly powerful veneer like Danica Fendier? I might have been headed for this,
he gestured to the cell around them,
but the cause would live on. It had to live on. And I knew that someone like Danica could be a mighty ally to have on our side.
Hunt cut in. But why not mention any of this during your murder trial?
My trial? You mean that two-day sham they televised with that lawyer the governor assigned me?
Briggs laughed and laughed. Hunt had to remind himself that this was an imprisoned man enduring unspeakable torture, and not someone he could punch in the face. Not even for the way his laugh made Quinlan shift in her seat.
I knew they'd pin it on me no matter what. Knew that even if I told the truth, I'd wind up here. So on the chance that Danica might have friends still living who shared her sentiments, I kept her secrets to myself.
You're ratting her out now, Bryce said. But Briggs didn't reply to that, and instead studied the dented metal table.
I said it 2 years ago, and I'll say it again now. Kara's didn't kill Danica or the Pack of Devils. The White Raven bombing, though? They might have managed that. Good for them if they did.
Hunt ground his teeth. Had he been this out of touch with reality when he'd followed Shahar? Had it been this level of fanaticism that prompted him to lead the Angels of the 18th to Mount Hermon? In those last days, would he have even listened to anyone if they'd advised against it? A hazy memory surfaced of Isaiah doing just that, screaming in Hunt's war tent. Fuck. Briggs asked,
Did a lot of Vanir die in the bombing?
Disgust curdled Bryce's face. No, she said, standing from her chair. Not a single one. She spoke with the imperiousness of a queen. Hunt could only rise with her. Briggs tisked.
Too bad.
Hunt's fingers balled into fists. He'd been so wildly in love with Shahar, with the cause. Had he been no better than this man? Bryce said tightly, Thank you for answering our questions. Without waiting for Briggs to reply, she hurried for the door. Hunt kept a step behind her. Even with Briggs anchored to the table. That she'd ended the meeting so quickly showed Hunt that Bryce shared his opinion. Briggs truly hadn't killed Danica. He'd nearly reached the open doorway when Briggs said to him,
You're one of the fallen, huh?
Hunt paused. Briggs smiled.
Tons of respect for you, man.
He surveyed Hunt from head to toe.
What part of the 18th did you serve in?
Hunt said nothing, but Briggs's blue eyes shone.
We'll bring the bastards down someday, brother.
Hunt glanced toward Bryce, already halfway down the hallway, her steps swift, like she couldn't stand to breathe the same air as the man chained to the table, like she had to get out of this awful place. Hunt himself had been here, interrogated people. More often than he cared to remember. And the kill he'd made last night? It had lingered. Ticked off another life debt, but it had lingered. Briggs was still staring at him, waiting for Hunt to speak. The agreement that Hunt would have voiced weeks ago now dissolved on his tongue. No,
He'd been no better than this man.
He didn't know where that put him.
So Briggs and his followers are off the list, Bryce said,
folding her feet beneath her on her living room couch. Syrinx was already snoring beside her.
Unless you think he was lying?
Hunt, seated at the other end of the sectional, frowned at the sunball game just starting on TV.
He was telling the truth. I've dealt with enough prisoners to sense when someone's lying.
The words were clipped. He'd been on edge since they'd left the Comitium through the same unmarked street door they'd used to enter. No chance of running into Sandriel that way. Hunt pointed to the papers Bryce had brought from the gallery, noting some of Danica's movements and the list of names she'd compiled.
Remind me who's the next suspect on your list.
Bryce didn't answer as she observed his profile, the light of the screen bouncing off his cheekbones, deepening the shadow beneath his strong jaw. He truly was pretty, and really seemed to be in a piss-poor mood.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Says the guy who's grinding his teeth so hard I can hear them. Hunt cut her a glare and spread a muscled arm along the back of the couch. He'd changed when they'd returned 30 minutes ago, having grabbed a quick bite at a noodles and dumplings food cart just down the block, and now wore a soft gray t-shirt, black sweats, and a white sunball cap turned backward. It was the hat that had proven the most confusing. So ordinary and guy-ish, for lack of a better word, that she'd been stealing glances at him for the past 15 minutes. Stray locks of his dark hair curled around the edges. The adjustable band nearly covered the tattoo over his brow, and she had no idea why, but it was all just disgustingly distracting.
What?
He asked, noting her gaze. Bryce reached forward, her long braid slipping over a shoulder, and grabbed his phone from the coffee table. She snapped a photo of him and sent a copy to herself, mostly because she doubted anyone would believe her that Hunt fucking Athalar was sitting on her couch in casual clothes, sunball hat on backward, watching TV and drinking a beer. The shadow of death, everyone.
That's annoying,
he said through his teeth. So is your face, she said sweetly, tossing the phone to him. Hunt picked it up, snapped a photo of her, and then set it down, eyes on the game again. She let him watch for another minute before she said,
You've been broody since Briggs.
His mouth twisted toward the side.
Sorry.
Why are you apologizing?
His fingers traced a circle along the couch cushion.
It brought up some bad shit about the way I helped lead Shahar's rebellion.
She considered, retracing every horrid word and exchange in that cell beneath the Comitium.
Oh,
she said carefully.
You're nothing like Briggs, Hunt.
His dark eyes slid toward her.
You don't know me well enough to say that.
Did you willingly and gleefully risk innocent lives to further your rebellion? His mouth thinned.
No.
Well, there you have it. Again, his jaw worked. Then he said,
But I was blind. About a lot of things.
Like what?
Just a lot.
He hedged.
Looking at Briggs, what they're doing to him? I don't know why it bothered me this time. I've been down there often enough with other prisoners that, I mean,
his knee bounced. He said without looking at her,
You know what kind of shit I have to do.
She said gently,
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, seeing Briggs like that today, it just made me remember my own.
He trailed off again and swigged from his beer. Icy, oily dread filled her stomach, twisting with the fried noodles she'd inhaled 30 minutes ago.
How long did they do that to you? After Mount Hermon?
7 years.
She closed her eyes as the weight of those words rippled through her. Hunt said,
I lost track of time, too. The Asteri dungeons are so far beneath the earth, so lightless, that days are years and years are days, and when they let me out, I went right to the Archangel Ramuel, my first
the handler. He continued the pattern for 2 years, got bored with it, and realized that I'd be more useful dispatching demons and doing his bidding than rotting away in his torture chambers.
"Burning solace, Hunt,"
she whispered. He still didn't look at her.
By the time Ramuel decided to let me serve as his assassin, it had been 9 years since I'd seen sunlight, since I'd heard the wind or smelled the rain, since I'd seen grass or a river or a mountain, since I'd flown.
Her hands shook enough that she crossed her arms, tucking her fingers tight to her body.
I am so sorry.
His eyes turned distant, glazed.
Hatred was the only thing that fueled me through it. Briggs's kind of hatred. Not hope, not love, only unrelenting, raging hatred. For the archangels, for the Asteri, for all of it.
He finally looked at her, his eyes as hollow as Briggs's had been.
So yeah, I might not have ever been willing to kill innocents to help Shahar's rebellion, but that's the only difference between me and Briggs. Still is.
She didn't let herself reconsider before she took his hand. She hadn't realized how much bigger Hunt's hand was until hers coiled around it. Hadn't realized how many calluses lay on his palms and fingers until they rasped against her skin. Hunt glanced down at their hands, her dusk-painted nails contrasting with the deep gold of his skin. She found herself holding her breath, waiting for him to snatch his hand back, and asked,
"Do you still feel like hatred is all that gets you through the day?"
"No,"
he said, eyes lifting from their hands to scan her face.
"Sometimes. For some things, yes, but no, Quinlan."
She nodded, but he was still watching her, so she reached for the spreadsheets.
"You have nothing else to say?"
Hunt's mouth twisted to the side. "You, the person who has an opinion on everything and everyone, has nothing else to say about what I just told you?" She pushed her braid over her shoulder.
"You're not like Briggs,"
she said simply. He frowned and began to withdraw his hand from hers. Bryce clamped her fingers around his.
"You might see yourself that way, but I see you too, Athalar. I see your kindness and your whatever."
She squeezed his hand for emphasis.
"I see all the shit you conveniently forget. Briggs is a bad person. He might have once gotten into the human rebellion for the right reasons, but he is a bad person. You aren't. You will never be. End of story."
"This bargain I've got with Micah suggests otherwise."
"You're not like him."
The weight of his stare pressed on her skin, warmed her face. She withdrew her hand as casually as she could, trying not to note how his own fingers seemed hesitant to let go. But she leaned forward, stretching out her arm, and flicked his hat.
"What's up with this, by the way?"
He batted her away.
"It's a hat."
"It doesn't fit with your whole predator in the night image."
For a heartbeat, he was utterly silent. Then he laughed, tipping back his head. The strong tan column of his throat worked with the movement, and Bryce crossed her arms again.
"Ah, Quinlan,"
he said, shaking his head. He swept the hat off his head and plunked it down atop her own.
"You're merciless."
She grinned, twisting the cap backward the way he'd worn it, and primly shuffled the papers.
"Let's look this over again. Since Briggs was a bust and the Viper Queen's out, maybe there's something with Danica at Luna's temple the night the horn was stolen that we're missing."
He drifted closer, his thigh grazing her bent knee, and peered at the papers in her lap. She watched his eyes slide over them as he studied the list of locations and tried not to think about the warmth of that thigh against her leg, the solid muscle of it. Then he lifted his head. He was close enough that she realized his eyes weren't black after all, but rather a shade of darkest brown.
"We're idiots."
"At least you said we,"
He snickered, but didn't pull back. Didn't move that powerful leg of his. The temple has exterior cameras. They would have been recording the night the horn was stolen.
You make it sound as if the 33rd didn't check that 2 years ago. They said the blackout rendered any footage essentially useless.
Maybe we didn't run the right tests on the footage, look at the right fields, ask the right people to examine it. If Danica was there that night, why didn't anyone know that? Why didn't she come forward about being at the temple when the horn was stolen? Why didn't the acolytes say anything about her presence?
Bryce chewed on her lip. Hunt's eyes dipped to it. She could have sworn they darkened.
That his thigh pressed harder into hers, as if in challenge, a dare to see if she'd back down. She didn't, but her voice turned hoarse as she said,
You think Danica might have known who took the horn? And she tried to hide it?
She shook her head. Danica wouldn't have done that. She barely seemed to care that the horn had been stolen at all.
I don't know, he said. But let's start by looking at the footage, even if it's a whole lot of nothing. And send it to someone who can give us a more comprehensive analysis.
He swiped his hat off her head and put it back on his own. Still backward, still with those little curling pieces of hair peeking around the edges. As if for good measure, he tugged the end of her braid, then folded his hands behind his head as he went back to watching the game. The absence of his leg against hers was like a cold slap.
Who do you have in mind?
His mouth just curved upward. Chapter 36. The three-level shooting range in Moonwood catered to a lethal, creative clientele. Occupying a converted warehouse that stretched four city blocks along the Istros, it boasted the only sniper-length gallery in the city. Hunt stopped by every few weeks to keep his skills sharp, usually in the dead of night when no one could gawk at the Umbra Mortis donning a pair of earmuffs and military-grade glasses, as he walked through the concrete halls to one of the private galleries. It had been late when he'd gotten the idea for this meeting, and then Jessica had slammed Quinlan with work the next day, so they'd decided to wait until nightfall to see where their quarry wound up. Hunt had bet Bryce a gold mark it'd be a tattoo parlor, and she'd raised him to 2 gold marks that'd be a fake grungy rock bar. But when she'd gotten the reply to her message, it had led them here. The sniper gallery lay on the northern end of the building, accessible through a heavy metal door that sealed off any sound. They grabbed electronic earmuffs that would stifle the boom of the guns, but still allow them to hear each other's voices on the way in. Before he entered the gallery, Hunt glanced over a shoulder at Bryce, checking that her earmuffs were in place. She noted his assessing look and chuckled.
Mother Hen.
I wouldn't want your pretty little ears to get blown out, Quinlan.
He didn't give her the chance to reply as he opened the door, thumping music blasting to greet them, and beheld the 3 males lined up along a waist-high glass barrier. Lord Tristan Flynn had a sniper rifle aimed toward a person-shaped paper target at the far, far end of the space, so distant a mortal could barely make it out. He'd opted out of using the scope, instead relying on his keen fey eyesight as Dannon and Declan Emmett stood near him, their own rifles hanging off their shoulders. Roon nodded their way and motioned to wait a moment.
He's gonna miss, Emmett observed over the bumping bass of the music, barely sparing Hunt and Bryce a glance. Off by 1/2 inch.
Screw you, Dick,
Flynn muttered and fired. The gunshot erupted through the space, the sound absorbed by the padding along the ceiling and walls. And at the far end of the gallery, the piece of paper swayed, the torso rippling. Flynn lowered the rifle.
Straight shot to the balls, dickbags.
He held out his palm toward Roon.
Pay up.
Roon rolled his eyes and slammed a gold coin into it as he turned to Hunt and Bryce. Hunt glanced at the prince's 2 friends, who were now sizing him up as they pulled off their earmuffs and eye gear. He and Bryce followed suit. He didn't expect the tinge of envy curdling in his gut at the sight of the friends together. A glance at Quinlan's stiff shoulders had him wondering if she felt the same. If she was remembering nights with Danica and the pack of devils, when they'd had nothing better to do than give each other grief over nonsense. Bryce shook it off faster than Hunt did as she drawled,
"Sorry to interrupt you boys playing commando, but we have some adult things to discuss."
Rune set his rifle on the metal table to his left and leaned against the glass barrier.
"You could have called."
Bryce strode to the table to examine the gun her cousin had set down. Her nails glimmered against the matte black. Stealth weapons, designed to blend into shadows and not give away their bearer with a gleam.
"I didn't want this intel out there in the networks."
Flynn flashed a grin. "Cloak and dagger shit. Nice." He sidled up to her at the table, close enough that Hunt found himself tensing.
"Color me intrigued."
Quinlan's gift of looking down her nose at males who towered above her usually grated on Hunt to no end, but seeing it used on someone else was a true delight. Yet that imperious look only seemed to make Flynn's grin grow wider, especially as Bryce said,
"I'm not here to talk to you."
"You wound me, Bryce," Flynn drawled.
Declan Emmett snickered.
"You up to do some more hacking shit?"
Quinlan asked him.
"Call it shit again, Bryce, and see if I help you,"
Declan said coolly.
Sorry. Your technology stuff.
She waved a hand.
"We need analysis of some footage from Luna's temple, the night the horn was stolen."
Rune went still, his blue eyes flaring as he said to Hunt,
"You've got a lead on the horn?"
Hunt said,
"Just laying out the puzzle pieces."
Declan rubbed his neck.
"All right. What are you looking for exactly?"
"Everything," Hunt said.
"Anything that might come up on the audio or thermal, or if there's a way to make the video any clearer despite the blackout."
Declan set his rifle beside Rune's.
"I might have some software that can help, but no promises. If the investigators didn't find anything 2 years ago, the odds are slim I'll find any anomalies now."
"We know," Bryce said. "How long would it take you to look?"
He seemed to do some mental calculations.
"Give me a few days. I'll see what I can find."
"Thank you."
Flynn let out an exaggerated gasp.
"I think. That's the first time you've ever said those words to us, B."
"Don't get used to it."
She surveyed them again with that cool, mocking indifference that made Hunt's pulse begin to pound, as drivingly as the beat of the music playing through the chamber's speakers.
"Why are you three even here?"
"We do actually work for the Ox, Bryce. That requires the occasional bit of training."
"So where's the rest of your unit?"
She made a show of looking around. Hunt didn't bother to hide his mirth.
"Or was this a roomies-only kind of thing?"
Declan chuckled.
"This was an invite-only session."
Bryce rolled her eyes and said to Rune,
"I'm sure the Autumn King told you he wants reports on our movements."
She crossed her arms. "Keep this," she gestured to all of them, "quiet for a few days."
"You're asking me to lie to my king,"
Rune said, frowning.
"I'm asking you not to tell him about this for the moment," Bryce said.
Flynn lifted a brow.
"Are you saying the Autumn King is one of your suspects?"
"I'm saying I want shit kept quiet."
She grinned at Rune, showing all her white teeth, the expression more savage than amused.
"I'm saying, if you three morons leak any of this to your Ox buddies or drunken hookups, I am going to be very unhappy."
Honestly, Hunt would have liked nothing more than to grab some popcorn and a beer, kick back in a chair, and watch her verbally fillet these assholes.
"Sounds like a whole lot of big talk,"
Rune said, then indicated the target at the back of the room. "Why don't you put on a little demonstration for Athalar, Bryce?" She smirked.
"I don't need to prove I can handle a big gun to run with the boys' club."
Hunt's skin tightened at the feral delight in her eyes as she said big gun. Other parts of him tightened, too. Tristan Flynn said,
"20 gold marks says we outshoot you."
Only rich-ass pieces of shit have 20 gold marks to blow on bullshit contests, Bryce said. Amber eyes dancing with amusement as she winked at Hunt. His blood thrummed, his body tensing as surely as if she'd gripped his cock, but her gaze already drifted to the distant target. She snapped the earmuffs over her arched ears. Flynn rubbed his hands together. Here we fucking go. Bryce popped on the glasses, adjusted her ponytail, and hefted Rune's rifle into her hands. She weighed it in her arms, and Hunt couldn't drag his eyes away from the way her fingers brushed over the chassis, stroking all the way down to the butt plate. He swallowed hard, but she merely fitted the gun to her shoulder, each movement as comfortable as he'd expect from someone raised by a legendary sharpshooter. She clicked off the safety and didn't bother to use the scope, as she said to none of them in particular.
Allow me to demonstrate why you all can kiss my fucking ass.
Three shots cracked over the music, one after another, her body absorbing the kickback of the gun like a champ. Hunt's mouth dried out entirely. They all peered up at the screen with the feet of the target.
You only landed one, Flynn snorted,
eyeing the hole through the heart of the target.
No, she didn't,
Emmett murmured, just as Hunt saw it too. The circle wasn't perfect. No, two of its edges bulged outward, barely noticeable. Three shots, so precise that they'd passed through the same small space. A chill skittered down Hunt's body that had nothing to do with fear, as Bryce merely reset the safety, placed the rifle on the table, and removed the earmuffs and glasses. She turned, and her eyes met Hunt's again, a new sort of vulnerability shining beneath the self-satisfied narrowing. A challenge thrown down, waiting to see how he'd react. How many males had run from this part of her, their alpha hole egos threatened by it? Hunt hated them all merely for putting the question in her eyes. He didn't hear whatever shit Flynn was saying as he put on the earmuffs and eye gear and took up the rifle Bryce had set down, the metal still warm from her body. He didn't hear Rune asking him something as he lined up his shot. No, Hunt only met Bryce's stare as he clicked off the safety. That click reverberated between them, loud as a thunderclap. Her throat bobbed. Hunt pulled his gaze from hers and fired one round. With his eagle-sharp vision, he didn't need the scope to see the bullet pass through the hole she'd made. When he lowered the gun, he found Bryce's cheeks flushed, her eyes like warm whiskey. A quiet sort of light shone in them. He still didn't hear any of what the males were saying, only the vague notion of even Rune cursing with appreciation. Hunt just held Bryce's stare.
I see you, Quinlan,
he silently conveyed to her.
And I like all of it.
Right back at you, her half-smile seemed to say. Hunt's phone rang, dragging his eyes from the smile that made the floor a little uneven. He fished it from his pocket with fingers that were surprisingly shaky. Isaiah Tiberian flashed on the screen. He answered instantly.